Oh, that's my Prime delivery.
What, already?
Only one thing can match the buzz of Prime's fast delivery, and that's the buzz of Prime's entertainment.
What are we watching?
Heads of State, that new action comedy with Idris Elba as the Prime Minister, John Cena as the President, and Priyanka Chopra Jonas as their only hope. Looks like a blast.
From fast delivery to explosive entertainment, it's on Prime. For only $8.99 a month, join now. Content includes limited ads, subscription auto-renews. For more information, go to amazon.co.uk/prime.
Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Welcome to a very exciting episode of How Success Happens. Today's guest is the host of one of the top-rated podcasts on Apple. It's called Mick Unplugged, and every week, business coach and entrepreneur Mick Hunt talks to business and cultural leaders. And rather than talking about finding out their why, he digs deeper to find out their because. So we're going to find out exactly what that means by welcoming Mick. How are you?
Dan, I am honored to be here in your presence today, brother.
I hear that so often. People are always honored to be in my presence. I'm like, you know, I'm just a guy. I'm just a regular guy. No, it's great to talk to you. You know, full disclosure. So I was listening to your chat with Dave Asprey this morning.
Okay.
And I want to explain maybe the sound of my voice a little bit. So in an episode that will have dropped 2 weeks ago, last night, I did a live taping with Robert Irvine, the celebrity chef. So we did the taping and then we went out to a pub. So bringing it back to Dave Asprey, I think I biohacked my body in the wrong direction. But but here we are.
That is awesome. And cool shout out to Robert Irvine. So, Dan, I don't know if you know this, but Robert's one of my very, very best friends. He's a mentor of mine. I have a leadership event next week, and Robert's one of the keynote speakers.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, tell him I said hello. We had a great time. And I'm just telling you, prepare yourself if he says, hey, you want to run out to the pub.
Robert and I have closed a couple of pubs.
Okay.
I don't know if I should say that publicly, but yes, we have closed a few down before.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, congratulations to you on your incredible podcast and success that you've had there. And, you know, no matter who we have on the show, we always start with the same questions. How do you personally define success?
To me, success is about what your legacy is going to say when you're no longer here. I don't think you define success in today's moment. I think success tells the story when you can't. And that literally defines everything that I do and why I push myself and others to be the best version of themselves, because that legacy will speak when you can't.
So we hear so much about finding your why. Why are you doing this? Which, you know, makes a lot of sense, but maybe it's gotten a little cliched at a certain point. But you talk about the because. So can you dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, I love Simon Sinek, and I'm a huge fan of starting with your why. And I think that is literally verbatim what it is. You start with your why. But there's something deeper. There's something that is the why behind the why behind the why. And I call that your because. Like, what's your real reason that you do the things that you do? What's the real purpose behind who you are and what you're trying to leave behind? And so for me, that's what your because is, right? I could probably guess, Dan, right? Your kids are your why. Your wife, your spouse, your significant other is probably your why. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that you know why those entities, those people are your why. And to me, that's your because.
You write about it on your website and you've talked a lot about it, but you know, this moment in your life where you decided that you were going to take control of situation at a very young age, at the age of 10. Can you tell everyone about that?
Yeah, man. It was a Saturday morning. And for the first 10 years of my life, I witnessed my mom go through emotional, physical, financial abuse from my dad, who lived in the same household, who was her husband. And I didn't want to normalize that. So it's a Saturday morning. It's actually Christmas Eve. Everyone should be happy. It should be joyous in the house, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting on the edge of the bed with tears running down my cheeks.
Mm.
But they were not my tears. They were the tears of my mom. My mom was leaning on me. And I knew that those tears represented pain. And I knew what probably had happened either the night before or just right then. And I said to myself, this is enough, right? Like, my mom is leaning on me. I need to be the person that changes her life. I didn't know how I was going to do it at 10. At 10, I wasn't physically stronger than my dad. I wasn't bigger than my dad. I probably wasn't smarter than my dad, right? But I understood then that I've got to be different. I have to change her life, my sister's life. I have to show them what a real man's supposed to be. And so I didn't know the term for it at 10, but today we would call it emotional intelligence, right? Like, I started to understand surroundings. I started to become very self-aware. I started to see and sense the triggers that my dad would have so that I could take the awareness, the pressure away from my mom onto me. So where my dad probably thought I was acting out sometimes, it was really saying, if you're going to be upset with someone, if you're going to abuse someone, abuse me because I'm prepared to.
Was it just something that just was, do you think was inside you? Did you learn that from somewhere? That's just remarkable that you could even think that way at such a young age.
I have this quote, Dan, that says, you don't rise to the occasion, you rise to your level of preparation. I think at 10, I was prepared to handle that, right? Like, I was prepared to stand up. Right before I made this decision, I asked my mom to leave. I was like, why don't you take my sister and you guys just leave? Like, I'll deal with it. Because as long as somebody's here, right, like, my dad's ego would be okay. And my mom said verbatim, because I love you, I won't do it. And so that's where that sense started for me. And so I made her a promise that I would do it. And so I think it was because it was an obligation, Dan, to be honest with you. I'm not going to say that I felt a change. I just knew that I was obligated to do it and I needed to fulfill that obligation.
Wow. Now, that's incredible. And I mean, you know, from what you've done in your professional life too, it seems like you have that ability to listen to people, to assess a situation and try to make the best of it for yourself and for them. So it's pretty incredible what you've done. And can you talk about how your career has progressed? Where did you start? And then we'll get to the podcast and the coaching.
Yeah. So where it started was the day I graduated college, I started working for a nationwide insurance sales agent or sales owner. And he hired me to be his sales manager. So I'm 22 years old, just graduated, got my MBA from the University of North Carolina. And honestly, it was a job, right? Like, all my friends were interviewing and waiting to get placed somewhere. And I got an immediate offer after the interview. So I took it. I remember sitting at his desk the first day, and he said, I have these plans. I want to be the biggest insurance agent in the state of North Carolina. I was like, awesome. How are we going to do that? And he looked at me in his Italian voice and said, that's why I hired you. You better go figure this, fill in your favorite four-letter word, out. And so 22 years old, can't say that I knew sales, but I understood people and relationships. And 5 years later, we were the biggest nationwide agent in the country.
Wow.
With the state of North Carolina. So that began my journey. But Dan, what I realized was I was helping someone build and live their dreams. And while that's totally great, I also had dreams of my own. While this owner was going to trips to like Banff and Rome and Paris and Atlantis, I was getting the trips to Atlanta, right? So Atlantis and Atlanta are definitely not the same place.
They're both warm.
They are warm, and that's where it ends. That is definitely where it ends. One has a lot of traffic, one has a lot of beach, right? But so I took that, what I learned in insurance and what I knew about relationship building and creation. I said, I'm going to start my own entity. So I started my own insurance agency from scratch. No mergers, no acquisitions, but 3 years later ended up having a $17, $18 million exit. It wasn't planned. It wasn't something I was trying to do or set out to do. It was just timing and someone seeing what I built. And so then I went in and headed up a larger broker. I inherited about $50 million of revenue. And in 4 years, grew that to over $70 million of revenue just by instilling my processes and my skill set into the business. And then I said, I want to help other entrepreneurs do this, because growing and scaling, while it will never be easy, people that tell you it's easy are lying and always look the other way. But it's not as complicated as it needs to be. And so if you're doing the right things, and if you're focused on culture and the right leadership mindset and the right revenue generating processes, scaling becomes the byproduct of those things. And so that's what I was doing, and that's what I do today, right? So we do a lot of leadership development and business growth strategies, and then came this podcast.
Were you drawn to insurance, or was it just like, hey, there's a job here and you took that job and that put you on this track?
I definitely was not purposely looking to go into insurance so that I could
protect you.
The most I knew about insurance was that I had health insurance and that my parents screamed about how much my car insurance was.
Yeah.
That's about all that I knew in insurance. But once I understood in this interview residual income, right, I was like, oh, that totally makes sense, right? Every time your auto policy or homeowner policy or business policy renews, that's just like you bought that policy the first time for the agency. So understanding residual income and building wealth was really important. And that's what drew me into insurance. And then I would say the relationship aspect drew me into the business insurance side. So my niche was definitely business or commercial insurance. So working with corporations was my thing.
It's interesting because a little while back, I spoke with Barbara Corcoran.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking about her first job, that she was a secretary at a real estate agency.
Yeah.
She said, I had no knowledge or interest or anything in real estate. So, but she knew what she was passionate about, which was working with people.
Yeah.
And that really excited her. So she told me, if that first job was at a plumbing supply company, like, I would probably be in plumbing supply right now.
Right.
So I always find it interesting that people such as yourself who are able to find such high levels of success, it's because you see an opportunity and you find your skills and you find your passion for something that you hadn't really thought about that much. Right. And you go with it. You're not cherry picking. This is exactly what I want to do. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, to me, human connection is really important. And when we talk about where we're at today, and AI is more than a buzzword, AI is a really big force in where we are today and where things are going. But the human connection of what we do in life will always be present. And so for me, insurance became something that I knew I could always have a conversation with someone. Whether people wanted to talk about insurance or not, I knew I could have a conversation. And I'm such a people person that, you know, I could naturally go into a room and know if I wanted to have conversations, I definitely.
Yeah, well, you proved that on your show. So I'd love to talk to you about where the concept came from. What was the initial thought to say, like, hey, I'm going to do a podcast and it's going to do really well?
Well, the funny thing, Dan, is neither of those two thoughts were my initial thoughts. I actually did not want to do a podcast. What I wanted to do was create YouTube content around your because and finding your because. And Les Brown is one of my mentors. And he was like, Mick, I think there's something more here. Like, you've got this voice and this should totally be a podcast.
Yeah.
So my joke is I've got a face for a podcast, the audio side of podcast. And then
I don't know what you're talking about, but continue.
Two of my best friends, Ryan Hanley, Daniel Song, and the third, Bradley Flowers, have podcasts. And they were like, Mick, you should do a podcast. And I'm like, guys, I don't listen to podcasts, right? Uh-huh. But Les said, Mick, I'll be your first guest. I was like, okay, first guest, Les Brown. That's different. Talked to Robert Irvine. He was like, Mick, I'll come on. Talk to a really good friend of mine, Kenny Anderson, former NBA player. He said he'd come on. So I said, wait, I have three guests.
Yeah.
If I release one episode a month, I've got enough time to go find other guests. So that was my initial strategy.
Okay.
I released the podcast episode with Les Brown, and all of a sudden my inbox is filled with, as you know, Dan, right? Like, oh, this person would love to be on your show, and this person would love to be on your show. And so I said, okay, finding guests won't be hard. But the premise of what we do on the show is literally talking about your because. Everyone has a unique because. Yeah. Everyone has overcome something in life. And I think that's what gravitates towards my listeners and viewers, right? It's not about me. My episodes are little about me, but 100% about my guest, because everyone has a story.
Yeah.
Everyone's going through something, and Dan probably has overcome something that someone's going through, and he's going to provide tips and tricks of how he overcame it.
Yeah.
Then therefore, so can I. And that's why we built the show the way we did.
I've been listening to it, and I really love the way you're able to draw these very different stories out of very different people. It's really cool. So you do this episode, you start getting people to come on. Was there a kind of moment where you're like, okay, this isn't just going to be good and we're going to have people on and it's going to be fun. Like, this is going to be a thing. Like, this is going to be a business. Was there a turning point for you where you realized that?
Yeah, the turning point was, it was May of last year, and the podcast was 3 months old. And my best friend Daniel texts me a photo and says, dude, you're like in the top 200 of self-improvement on Apple. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, look, you're like number 57 in self-improvement. And I said, wait, podcasts have rankings? And he's like, yeah. And I said, wait a second. This, like, I'm literally about to go on stage at an event with Les Brown, and my best friend is texting me that I'm ranking. And at that point, I said, oh, I didn't know that this was a thing. I thought, unless your name was Joe Rogan or Mel Robbins, you just had a podcast for fun. And I knew you could have advertisers and sponsors, but I didn't know it was like a real thing. That moment literally changed the thought process of what I had behind the podcast. And I knew at that point I needed to run it like a business, as a hobby.
That's incredible. That's so great. So all these guests you've had, I'm wondering, were there any, did anyone catch you off guard? Maybe they were more soulful than you thought they were going to be, or they were more, I don't know, robotic or clinical than you thought they were going to be? Like, did anyone surprise you more than others when you started talking to them?
So I won't name names. So I'll go the latter part. I'll go the robotic part. It surprises me that there are a few folks, and these aren't like famous people or whatever, that just don't understand interview and the interview process and interview skills, right? Like, Dan, I'm sure you've been through this too. You ask someone a question and they give you like two words and it's like, I need some help here, right? And these people have publicists and everything. And it's like the lack of interview training or just being conversational surprises me. And honestly, I just don't release those episodes, right? So because it's my show and it's my content, I will give you your clips and sound bites so that you have assets. I just don't publish them on the show. And I probably just got myself in trouble, Dan. But if you've been on the Mick Unplugged show and you haven't been on, it's just because interview skills need a little help.
Or you just blame it on a technical problem.
If you haven't been on Mick Unplugged, we had technical issues. And for whatever reason, I sent them to Dan to download and edit, and he said he couldn't work with it.
There you go. Perfect. As long as, well, you have no power to oversee this episode, so it's coming out whether you like it or not.
But yeah, so I would definitely say the surprise is just more on that end of not understanding how to be interviewed and how to respond. As far as soulful, I mean, every guest that I've had that I've released has had a dynamic story. I mean, I probably cried on an episode with Quincy Carter, like hearing his story overcoming drug abuse and how he almost wasn't here was touching. Hearing Lauren Sisler from ESPN talk about how her parents both died of overdose, of drug overdose, within like a couple of weeks of each other. And she hid that from the world.
Wow. Right? Like, yeah.
Like hearing those stories in those moments that sometimes people share, but they go a little bit deeper because of an emotional connection that we're able to have. Like, those are the things I'll always hold dear to my heart.
So what have you learned? I mean, you describing your childhood, you are a pretty resilient person, I would say. But talking to people who have been through some of these terrible things and came out the other side of it, what have you learned about resilience? Is it something that's just inside some people and isn't in others? Is it something that can be learned?
I don't know if it can be learned. I think resiliency literally is the verb in and of itself. It's the art that we have to continue to practice, right? Like, it's actually easier, Dan, as you know, to give up or to stop or to quit something than it is to push through. I think there's a laser focus that people who have gone through things, and all of us have gone through things, right? Whether big or small, everyone's gone through things, but it's that laser focus and that grit. And to me, it's the connection to your because. If you're doing the things that you do for something or someone else for a very specific reason and purpose, that is enough to continue the fight. That's enough to continue the push. And a lot of times it's just surrounding yourself with the right energy and the right people that are going to support you through that push.
That's great. I wanted to ask you about the Mick factor, your leadership framework. I love how you created one out of your name, but can you talk us through these five powerful pillars? Because, you know, people listening to this, a lot of leaders out there, I think this would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Mick factor, as much as I'd love to take credit for it, it was given to me by Les Brown. So Les was like, Mick, there's four or five things that you've mastered, right? And the first one is mastery. So the M, mastery. And I call it the Bruce Lee effect, right? Bruce Lee said, I fear not the man who practices over 10,000 kicks. I fear the man who practices one kick 10,000 times. And so for me as a leader, what's that one thing that you do really, really well and master that? Like really show up and just continue to develop that one skill. A lot of times we talk about developing our weaknesses. No, true mastery is I've got a strength and I'm just going to continue to magnify this strength, right?
Yeah.
So that's the I is impact. And that's something that Robert Irvine has instilled in me. We've talked about Robert a little bit today, but the one thing that he challenged me with was, Mick, if what you're doing isn't for impact, then why are you doing it? And so again, as a leader, it shouldn't be about the title you have. It should be about the impact that you generate. And so that's really important.
Yep, yep.
And then the C, like there's two, it's courage and it's character, right? Like you've got to have the courage to make tough decisions as a leader, right? But everything that you do should be done with character. And so that's really important to me. Abraham Lincoln said, your character is like a tree, then it's your shadow before anyone sees you. So your character is what people know and see about you before they even see or meet, right? And so that's really important. And then the K is keep going. It's the resiliency that we just talked about.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, you definitely have to keep going.
Maybe spur of the moment, you could come up with a leadership framework around Dan.
I got you. Dan, the decision, you've got to be able to make it, right? Like if you can't make a decision and you can't decide on things, it's really not going to be there. The A is attitude. Attitude reflects leadership. You got to make sure that you are willing to be present with your attitude and that people see it. Attitude doesn't have to be a bad or a negative thing, right? Like you can have a positive attitude. Like I know Dan, the smile he has, right? Dan's attitude is energetic. And the N, never quit. No matter what you do, never quit, Dan. So make the decision, have a positive attitude, and never quit, brother. The awesome. Dan effect. Not the Dan factor, the Dan effect.
Oh, my God. And that's off, well, trademark that, but that was off the top of the dome right there. That was
rehearsed and practice. There you go.
It's a good thing my name isn't Snuffleupagus. We'd be here for an hour.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. So in you're a coach, you speak to people all the time about leadership. What do you think are some of the common sort of mistakes that people might make about leadership? What springs to mind is like, I have to be a complete hard ass to get people to do what needs to be done. Are there other things like that that you think people think is a positive, but is actually like shooting themselves in the foot?
Dude, I love the fact that you brought this up because I referenced this in the book that I have coming out, How to Be a Good Leader When You've Never Had One or Never Seen One. And to me, one of the biggest misnomers in leadership is, oh, well, I've got an open door policy. Really? You do? Or you want people to just come into you, right? A great leader, modern leaders have to be present, right? So you should be meeting your employees where they are. Like you should never have an open door policy. I think another thing that is outdated in leadership is micromanagement that's disguised as, oh, I give my team freedom to do what they want, or I empower my team. you know, you're micromanaging, right? Like,
yeah,
you're letting the blame go to someone else by saying, I'm empowering you to make this decision. But what you're really doing is micromanaging behind the scenes. And the biggest thing for me, Dan, like, if there's anything that anyone gets out of this, is emotional intelligence is real, right? Like, I'd say old school leaders say, I've got to have the answers. I got to have them now. I've got to respond, and I've got to respond boldly. The modern leader, it's all about emotional intelligence. It's okay to take 5 seconds before I respond. It's okay to make sure that my self-regulation and that I'm making this decision by seeing everything that's going on, right? Like, when I talk to leaders and we talk about emotional intelligence, you know, I say this thing, right? It doesn't mean that you're going to be emotionless. It just means that you're going to be full and connected to your emotions.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's also great. And what you were talking about, the fake micromanagement, you know, I always think sometimes when I'm talking to people, maybe if it's in a live setting and someone's talking about like what you just said, I give my people the freedom to make decisions, and you see like their people in the background rolling their eyes, like, right. You know,
right.
That is absolutely not happening. So that's such a great point. Wow. So when is the book coming out?
September 23rd. How to All be right. a good leader when you've never had one.
I love that. That's a great title. All right, Mick, let's get into the speed round, shall we?
Let's go.
Okay, so you're working out. What are you listening to, music or a podcast?
I'm definitely listening to music, and it's going to be 90s hip hop.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
What's on your most played list?
Probably Tupac, Hit 'Em Up.
Nice.
Every once in a while, you need Pac in your ear, you know?
Absolutely. I love that. So what is your favorite way to turn off your brain?
Man, so my favorite way is having conversations with my wife, man. Like, I talk about leaders being present. I think husbands have to be present too. So having those evening chats outside on the balcony, watching the sun fall, it's a great way to let the brain rest a little bit.
What is a habit you are happy to have? And one you wish you could ditch?
A habit I'm happy to have is my morning journaling. So I like writing down what I want my day to look like. Because if I can envision that particular day, I can make success happen. What's a habit I wish I didn't have? Bro, I am ultra competitive. I find a way to compete in everything that I do. It drives everyone around me crazy. I don't care what it is, man. I'm trying to compete, brother.
So you one of those... you like to win, but you hate to lose kind of people?
Absolutely. I don't care if I win. I'm supposed to win, but I hate freaking losing, bro. I hate losing.
Well, maybe that explains it's worked out for you, I think. So who's your dream guest and your nightmare guest?
Dream guest would be Michael Jordan. I'm a Tar Heel, so I'm a UNC grad. So for me, that would just accomplish everything that I need to in life. Like, that would be the pinnacle. My nightmare would have to be Coach K, man. I hate Duke with everything I have in me. So no Dukies on my podcast.
Oh, wow. I love that. I'm sure you watched the Michael Jordan documentary.
The Last Dance?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We both make things personal.
Yeah. I interviewed Coach K a while back, and he's a lovely guy, Mick. You should give him a chance.
You interviewed him, so I don't have to.
That's beautiful. Awesome. Well, where can listeners, obviously you've got the podcast Mick Unplugged on all platforms. Where else can they stay up to date with everything you're up to?
Mick Hunt Official is my official website. So MickHuntOfficial.com. And then on Instagram, I am Mick Hunt or Mick Unplugged.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for doing this. I want to thank Robert Irvine again for scrambling my brain. And did you say you're doing something with him soon?
Yeah, I have a leadership event in my hometown of Greenville, South Carolina, and Robert is speaking at my event.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely. Well,
give him a hug from me. But hey, man, it was really great meeting you, and I really enjoy your show, and hopefully we'll cross paths again soon.
Absolutely. I'm proud of you, man, of all the great things that you're doing in this day in history. I love it, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.